Hey everyone, before we get into the episode, I just want to say very quick, the RPG Goblin has a Patreon. If you love the show and really enjoy what we're doing here with introducing people to new TTRPGs outside of D&D, then please consider supporting the Patreon. I started this podcast after I got really burnt out making dice, which was my full-time job before, and I have truly found something that makes me so excited and passionate and that I love doing and that would be my absolute dream job, and it is running this podcast. It is talking about TTRPGs and making it more accessible for people. I'm doing this all solo, and to be able to keep doing that and not have to split my time between a job and being able to continue doing more TTRPG content, that is what the Patreon is for, so that we can continue doing this fully, make this a dream job, and yeah, make TTRPGs more accessible for people and all kinds of fun TTRPG content. So if you enjoy the show, please check out the Patreon, either in the description of this episode or at patreon.com/therpggoblin. And along with supporting the show, you also get to be a part of the RPG Goblin Discord server and monthly TTRPG parties with giveaways, guests, and talk about TTRPGs all we want and be able to ask me questions directly. So yeah, thank you so much. Any little bit of support means the absolute world to me. And yeah, let's get to the episode. Welcome, everyone, to the RPG Goblin, a TTRPG exploration podcast where we usually discover different games like every single week, but this episode's going to be a little bit different as we are actually going to be having like a proper interview with Grant Howitt. If you don't know who Grant Howitt is, I don't really know how that's possible. Well, maybe you just don't know TTRPGs yet, but he is the designer behind great games such as like Heart, the City Must Fall, right? Or the City Beneath.
Close enough.
I got it. It's
all right.
Heart, the City Beneath, Spire, and then probably you might know him more through the game called Honey Heist, which is basically, you know, bear criminals, great game, goofy game. We love Grant's one-page RPGs here. But along with our special guest, Grant Howitt, we also have Grant Nordine from Game Master Monday as our sort of like co-host here for the vibes conversation guy. Yeah.
It's a Noob's All Grants episode, honestly, is what we're doing here today.
Willow
double booked us. We both showed up. It's fine.
Yeah, this was actually just purely an accident.
We read the calendar.
Oh. Oh, yeah, I guess you can be on the show.
Yeah.
How'd you get the link?
She was doing an interview and I came in halfway through and she started over. I don't know what happened.
Actually, the origin of this is when we were doing the Designing One-Shots episode. Grant Nordine absolutely loves goofy games, games that last one session, things like that, aka exactly what Grant Howitt does. Perfect one-page goofy games, and was saying like, man, it would be really awesome to actually talk to Grant Howitt, and so we made that possible.
Yeah.
What's up, motherfuckers? I read my mentions.
Hell yeah.
Not to be a weird fanboy about it or anything.
I've got very little on. I don't get asked to be on a lot of things.
That's crazy.
Not to be overly sincere or anything, but I told Willow in that episode that specifically your game, The Witch is Dead, is what blew the doors open for me for like running RPGs and finding the flavor of shit that I like, and was kind of one of the very early one-shots I got to record for our show proper now. And man, Willow was like, you might not hear a lot about like a specific RPG today. I'm like, this guy has written like easily 50 brilliant fucking things, and I'm just stoked to be in the same recording session.
I'm actually over 100 now.
I was gonna say 100, and then I was like, I don't want to overshoot it.
No, it's, I think I just put out the 80th one page.
That's crazy.
I'm quite keen to stop.
Oh my, yeah.
Some points.
You know, like, we're not going to be hearing about one type of game. We're going to be hearing about probably a million types of games throughout this whole episode. So everyone just, like, have a pen and paper ready, write them all down, check them out. Fuck.
I'm not a note-taking GM, Willow.
Well, you have to be this time, all right? All right? You can take notes one time. It's okay.
I got C's in school.
But, yeah, no, I mean, for me personally, Honey Heist, I think, was either the first or second TTRPG I ever played outside of D&D. I played it with a group that I normally play D&D with. It was their first ever TTRPG for sure, outside of D&D. And it went insane. I had a polar bear commit vehicular manslaughter. And I can just thank and I can thank you for that. It was beautiful. I played the Wizard's Dead and love it.
I'm really excited to hear about that. And it's really nice to see that I've been able to permeate, like with Honey Heist especially, I've been able to permeate the underground of this fine hobby.
Yeah.
And it's become kind of like a game bong that gets passed around in between, like,
what a great character.
In between sessions. And if like D&D's like dinner, I'm not serving dinner.
The after dinner bong.
Shall we retire to the drawing room? Huff down some fat clouds.
Fuck yeah.
Jeffrey, have you any of that good kind? Yeah,
it's so true though.
but my experience of role playing games, the first things which I really got exposed to, so I grew up in the countryside in Portugal, and my folks moved over there when I was just going to secondary school, or high school as you'd call it, my first exposure to RPGs was like free downloadable games in 2002. So like text files, HTML pages, that sort of shit.
Right.
And so I hadn't read Dungeons and Dragons until I got to university, and I'd already been playing role-playing games for a few years. But my first exposure to role-playing games was as this sort of weird, crusty, strange thing. And I think I discovered big motherfucking crab truckers before I'd played D&D. Sorry, where? Big motherfucking crab truckers is kind of closer to my oeuvre, and it's like a decade before I started. It's like you know all that bubblegum?
No.
Oh my days. Oh. So I didn't make this shit up broadly. It arises from how I first saw games, which was this weird sort of grubby strangeness on the internet. And I'm really glad that I've been able to carry on doing that for a new generation of people who are like, well, role playing, you got to count your arrows, right? And I move 30 foot around. Shut the fuck up. You're a bear.
Oh my God, my heart. A man after my own heart.
I got one mechanic and it's barely finished.
For those who aren't, I cannot believe I never made that connection. So big motherfucking crab truckers, yeah, that's by, oh fuck, who made that? That's Mailbox, right? Who did that?
I only ever saw it on 4chan, which dates.
Oh, that's
this.
Super
I only
fair.
I only ever saw it on 4chan with all the names scrubbed off, like they share my games.
Oh my God.
I love that. Oh my God.
No one really knows who made Honey Heist. It's like a JD Salinger situation.
The first short game I put out was a game called Dr. Magnet Hands. One of the more popular ones is a game called Dr. Magnet Hands, and I found it on 4shared.com, and they downloaded it, taken out my name, and uploaded it again. Like,
Jesus.
Like I was some sort of like recalcitrant emperor. And they decided they want to strike me from history.
Yeah.
Big
motherfucking
big motherfucking crowd truckers. I'm not intimately familiar with this game, but I have been aware of it because it has the greatest intro line to maybe any RPG from that era ever. And it's I hope I get it right after that big intro, but it's like bold print one side of the page, and then it just says, "Okay, here's the fucking deal," and then it just explains the rest of the game.
That's so good. Yes, every RPG should start like that.
Yeah. I just found it. Yes, it's literally, okay, here's the fucking deal. And then it explains the rules of the game. It rocks.
I have never heard about this game before, and I now have a new mission in life.
Absolute forerunner. Absolute forerunner. I think it's not, it's maybe not as playable or accessible as some of the more modern games. It's like Lasers and Feelings, for example, because it's a very focused story. You know, you are big motherfucking crab truckers.
Yeah.
but it has that concept of like, you are something unusual, and we're barely going to give you the rules to do it, and it only has to hang together for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. this connects like a lot of my favorite How It projects. because like a lot of your stuff is kind of in that same vein. Like you were saying, you are an odd thing and you must go on an adventure. Jason Statham's Big Vacation comes to mind off the bat for something like that.
You shared that with me. Oh my God.
Jason Statham's Big Vacation?
Yeah, I've never saw that one before.
It's great. It's fantastic.
Have you seen the back page of that one, Grant?
The back page of it? Okay, see, I have it in my library and I've ran this game, but now I'm like...
For the physicals, we put out a secret back page for every single game. And the one for Jason Statham's Big Vacation is Bryan Cranston's Big Expansion. And we actually got him in to write it. It's amazing.
That's amazing.
It's weird because it sounds like he just sort of repeated a lot of the stuff from his Wikipedia entry. Mm-hmm. But he did a great drawing of Jason's dog, so we reprinted it.
That rocks. I got to get my hands on that. I love Jason Statham's Big Vacation. I remember reading that game for the first time, and I was like, the title is funny in and of itself, and then you read that the villain of the game is called the Wesley Sniper, and I'm like, this guy fucks.
This guy I love this dude. Hey everyone, it is time for the midpoint break in today's episode. I really hope that you are enjoying it so far. If you are, please make sure to follow the RPG Goblin wherever you listen to your podcasts so that you can be reminded whenever there is a new episode, which comes out weekly. And if you haven't yet, please make sure to give the RPG Goblin a rating wherever you listen to it. It really helps other people know that you're enjoying the show, and it just makes me really happy to see. If you want more behind the scenes and knowing what's happening with the RPG Goblin outside of the podcast, please make sure to follow me on social media as well. I mainly use Threads and TikTok at the moment, which you can find me on both at the RPG Goblin. I like to spotlight a lot of games in much shorter videos there. I also like to show off what I'm reading, and I like to talk about TTRPGs there, so join the conversation. Also, just as a reminder, the RPG Goblin does have a Patreon. And if you would like to see this show continue and you like what we're doing here with introducing people to new TTRPGs, please make sure to go support it if you can. It's only $5 a month for the lowest tier, and that will get you access to the RPG Goblin Discord server along with monthly TTRPG parties where we will have guests, giveaways, and generally awesome TTRPG conversations since you can ask questions and, yeah, just have a really good time. The first party is going to be at the end of February, and I'm really, really excited for it. So if you want to know what that party is going to have in it, please make sure to follow the RPG Goblin on social media. Now, I appreciate all the support towards this show, whether it be through listening, following along with the podcast, or going and becoming a patron. It all means the world to me, and I want to thank you so, so very much. This is so good. This is just like I know, at least for me, you know, it's been like within the last like year. Yeah, like year that I've gotten into TTRPG, so I'm still pretty new in this, and so being able to hear like all of this stuff that I don't think I would have been able to hear.
I'm also, my sincere apology for being like, oh my god, you haven't heard of X? Burr. Sorry
she's
about that.
Little.
Obviously,
she's
small. Yeah, you're like 12 years old.
Yeah.
And my apologies. That's not a cool thing. You have so much to look forward to. There is just the internet is a vast mine of bullshit. And there's so much fun in there.
It truly is. Yeah, no, I look very forward to all of the off the wall games, and yours were definitely the first introduction into that. Oh my, this is gonna be fantastic. So guys, I'll just say this very quick. If you're listening to this episode, just be prepared for it to be chaotic.
Unfocused.
Unfocused, chaotic.
I've listened to some of your other shows. It's not
Will
that be a surprise to your listenership?
It's my fault.
No, not really.
Okay. A little bit.
It's just what you expect, at least for sure, when Grant is on here. You're a fly.
I have a great analogy about flies and eating shit. Yeah.
Which we still need to make.
Oh my
days, game.
that was so useful, that analogy.
I know.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, just like if anyone didn't catch this. It was in the podcast which led to my arrival. But Grant's was an actor that you were saying, like, describe that, or was it just your invention?
That was me off the dome.
Oh, shit.
If you let me talk for long enough, I'll eventually say something brilliant.
Yeah, it's very clever, and I think like your character is a fly on shit. What's shit? what are you running after? And yeah, that's such a great way to go and like to go into a role playing game, because so often, especially with like newer players or older players who are stuck in their ways, you'll start GMing and they'll just be like, oh, I don't know, oh, I'm gonna hang out over here, oh, I don't know, and they'll be really passive and it's boring. Mm-hmm. And if I've got a table full of people who are wildly trying to find the plot, all I want.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, like it's true. I make my bread and butter running one shots for my podcast, you know. So when I got to talk about it, I had to sit there and like think about my philosophy a little bit, and it's pretty much just like keep the pacing up. And I'm just, you know, I'm just like talking to Willow about it, and suddenly the analogy comes into my brain. Maybe I recently watched A Bug's Life. I don't know.
Do they eat a lot of shit in that film?
There's a scene in A Bug's Life where it's like two flies in a bar, yeah, and like a waitress comes by. Yeah, who ordered the poo-poo platter? This they just go nuts on a piece of shit. This is a PG movie for children.
Like, it's a great movie, though.
You know, it's like, yeah, if you're playing a one shot, or hell, if you're designing a one shot, you know, who is the fly? What shit do they need to eat before they die? You
know? It's golden advice. It truly is.
Thank you. I hope that to be my legacy as I when I leave this mortal coil one day. I hope my there are many flies and many shits on
fly
my grave.
Nordine.
Please.
Oh, you're the shit guy. Yeah.
Oh, you're the shit guy. Okay,
you're
dude.
The shit guy.
Guilty as charged.
Actually, I'm
throwing my hands up in the air. They're covered in shit. Like, yeah.
Been practicing. I actually sell shit. I've got some in the back of my car if you need some. I'll be selling some.
All-purpose shit.
It's branded. Yeah, you can submit this on your plot or any sort of plot element or character you want.
Manure, pranks. Yep, I think those are the two main things you use it for, so yeah. Yeah, pretty right.
Ask me a question.
Will. You have any questions?
Let's do an interview.
Absolutely. So I'm actually, you know, with this conversation leading up with, you know, Grant being known as the shit guy, I'm curious of what
I'm the piss guy. Thank you for asking.
Right.
The piss guy. Okay. Yeah. Got the opposites. Good. Or not opposites.
Compliments.
Complimentary. Yeah. Yeah. But
so for Grant, it's more of a life advice thing, and it's a sex thing for me.
It works great because, like, you can't, like, that's crass. I was going to say you can't take a shit without taking a piss.
You're shit, like, Grant. Do you know Piss Grant? Well, I was in a show with him once, actually. Sorry, no, I'm not Piss Grant. I'm sorry, Willow. I lost the question.
Holy shit.
Let's go.
Yeah. So I'm
Why do they wear a hoodie?
I don't know. It's you laugh and
I always
it gets
get
warm.
Hot when I laugh. Yeah. That's the question, Willow.
Yeah, so, I am curious, though, specifically of what you think about being, like, the Honey Heist guy. Like, that being, like, the TTRPG that I, like, you are the most known for. You know, if I hear your name, it's Honey Heist connected to it. It's not usually any of the other games. And I'm really curious of what you think about that kind of being your legacy. At least right now.
No, that's fine. It will be. Let's be honest here. It is, and it will continue to be.
Unless you make something even more off the wall that people just
You know what? I think it is a keen reminder and a humbling reminder of how important it is to get played on Critical Role.
That's actually a really good point.
What was that all?
That was in, what was that, 2017, I think they played it. 18, maybe, I don't quite remember. I got a message from Marisha Ray, one of the three women in Critical Role. I didn't know who the fuck she was. And so a woman messaged me and said, I'm interested in running your game on stream. Do you have any advice? I'm like, yeah, it's easy, don't worry.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah,
and then looked her up as oh Matt Mercer follows you. Oh fuck!
Matt Mercer very follows you.
Oh yeah, he very follows you all the way down the altar. But she was absolutely fantastic about it, and she was really keen to say, like, we're playing this game, and here's Grant, here's his patron, Here's where you can find it. And like, I sent her a t-shirt with the game on it, and she wore the t-shirt on stream when she ran it and that sort of thing. And she, like, in every instance, she's always taken extra time to say, this is where you can get the game from, go and support the creator. Mm-hmm. And most people don't do that. And considering that she was like the I'll say it, Yogscast. Yeah, I'm coming for you, Yogscast. who
beef in the RPG Goblin?
It doesn't matter so much these days. You know, I'm doing all right now. I'm not bitter about it. But
of course,
many years ago, they played Honey Heist. They played Goblin Quest, my first ever role playing game, mm-hmm. on stream. And apparently, they found it in the fucking woods, and all the names had been scratched out. Because they didn't say, oh, and by the way, you can buy it here from this struggling author. Uh-huh. And so, like anyway, because Marisha was so good at that, that kind of resulted in our success and our company, mm-hmm. now. And, like, we've got, like, I mean, shit, there's 10 people in the business.
That's awesome.
We're writing games, and most of us are full-time. And it is absolute luck. That Marisha, and you know, it's a good game and it works, mm-hmm. and that's fine. But Marisha found it and she was like, yeah, okay, I'll have that. And this benediction from the gods of TTRPG internet came down. Mm-hmm. She touched me briefly on the forehead. And I was filled with a divine golden light, and then I had a career. And it's okay. I spend most of my time now, and I'm really glad I get to do this, writing big, serious games. Mm-hmm. I did, me and Chris did Spire, we did Heart, mm-hmm. and we've been working on the last 2.5 years for a game called Hollows, which is started off as, wouldn't it be fun to fight big monsters? Because every time you fight a big monster in a role-playing game, it's kind of just maths.
Yeah.
And it gets a bit boring. And so we iterated and iterated and iterated and went on, and then I think by the 12th draft, I was like, and it's about toxic masculinity and the form
of
empire.
There it is.
Of course, yeah.
There it is. And then suddenly I cared. And and all of these games are about, you know, they're about depression, they're about inequality, and they're about these enormous, profound things that we feel. Heart is a game about dying and mm-hmm. having the best possible death. And Hollows is a game about dying over and over and over until you become someone else's problem. When your character is killed in Hollows, you become a dungeon for everyone else to go into and murder you.
That's so good.
Hollows rips. Willow, yeah. You gotta play Hollows.
I have not heard of this one. Absolutely. Oh my god. I love monster hunting games, so absolutely.
I hope you like 1860s England.
You know what?
That's the closest we have to a historical time on our what's the word? An anachronistic setting. Anyway, point being, I write big serious games, and they're about things, and mm-hmm. I Chris and I try to do things where we can talk about the imposter syndrome, and then put rules in that for the put pistol rules. Mm-hmm. in about imposter syndrome, and we don't say, hey, this is imposter syndrome, guys, but we want the game mechanics to make you feel like an imposter and that sort of thing. And that's really clever work, and it's hard work. Mm-hmm. And Honey Heist, I dashed out on a bus, but people love it and it resonates with people. And I think that I can write 250 page books, and you know, and we can have them produced beautifully, and we mm-hmm. can get art made for them, and we have a whole team of people creating something absolutely incredible, and then these works of art. But what matters is sitting down around a table and playing games. And Honey Heist has done that for thousands of people all over the world. Mm-hmm. Is they've seen this chicken scratch bullshit on a single bit of paper. They've seen this thing which they downloaded off the internet for free. Not from me, just someone else who decided to upload it. And they look at it and they're like, well, this can't be that hard, can it? And they have a go. And it's fun and it's freewheeling. And it's not, oh, okay, well, the door has this many hit points.
Yeah.
And then, oh, there's 7 goblins in the other. It's like, no,
it's brain empty. You run it. Like, when I ran it for the first time, it was after I didn't get, any sleep. I had no time to even, really look at the game past, what the rules were.
Yeah.
And then I got into it and we played. And it was amazing.
You can waste a lot of time by reading a game before you run it, I find.
Yeah. Preach.
So I am thrilled and excited, and a bit humbled to be the part of, to be that first step into role playing, and especially that first step into role playing where people are like, oh, what is this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, what can it do?
Yeah.
And that's, and like, and then maybe they never play again. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they're like, oh, I'll try Dungeons and Dragons. Oh, this works for me. I'll buy every Dungeons and Dragons. Fine, whatever, mm-hmm. sure. But sure. I really hope that this opens up the world of playing pretend. I've been able to open up the world of playing pretend with people, yeah. and letting off some steam and having fun with you, with your friends or people who might become your friends. Because I've made every friend I've had as a GM. I find people that I like the look of, and then I like, oh, do you want to come to a place where I control all the social interaction?
Where I have all the power.
And if you do it wrong, I can ask you to leave. And the good ones, I slowly stop playing Dungeons and Dragons with them. That's kind of that's how it works. Yeah.
Wow, do I feel seen. Ah, finally, I have complete control of what happens in the social interaction.
I know.
Not that I'm like, I'm pretty extroverted, but it's also like, I'm also a little narcissistic, so it's a really lethal combination for a GM. I was going to just like add on, because like, for those who don't know, Grant does a lot of writing for Rowan, Rook, and Descartes, and which I've been following for like the hottest of minutes, because I am just so stoked for Eat the Reich to come out.
Mm.
Speaking of big games with big important themes, eating Nazis.
smooth brained one shot bait. It was described as on the internet, and that's pretty
really
accurate. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I think that I don't think they were cruel, but they weren't wrong.
As a smooth brained person who runs one shots for a podcast, it worked.
It got me.
I was hooked immediately. But I mean, like, I said it before, like, I got my start doing RPGs by running D&D, and the number one thing I kept thinking as I learned how to play D&D incorrectly for a long time, because I refused to read any book for any reason about that game, was just like, man, this is so fucking complicated, and I don't know if this hobby is really for me. Mm. And then I found The Witch is Dead. And I was like, oh my, thank fuck.
And like, I'm like, The Witcher's Dead is the first one I ever did. That's my like my first ever one page game. It's an experiment.
It's so good. I love that game.
It's a little OSR game, but like it ties into the like to the old school Renaissance or revival or whatever you want to call it. In like everything's really hard, and you have to cheat to win. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
I think every single game of The Witcher's Dead, without fail, they've tried to kill the witch hunter by summoning dinner in his mouth, or like by because like for anyone who doesn't know, the setup of The Witch is Dead is you play the familiars of a witch, and she gets killed in this really sweary intro paragraph, which makes every American parent really upset. Like, and then you have to go and find the witch hunter, rip out his eyes, bring them back to her corpse. So she comes back to life. And I will say, I got complaints about the language. Didn't get any complaints about the eye gouging or the murder or the black magic.
USA! USA! we're cool with gore, we're cool with sex stuff, but the minute you start cussing...
This would be a great game for me to play with my kids. But could you maybe replace the fucks in the first paragraph with the
or
word
maybe
gun?
Don't read it!
Sir, she has to eat eyes. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Broadly, the gag there is that you're given a mission to go and kill someone, and you don't have what you need to do it, and so you have to cheat. And like all the spells you have are like read book or open door or make plant grow, and what you need is like, you know, throw knife, and so you have to come up with interesting uses for these for these powers. And it's convincing the GM that stuff works. And I've gone back and forth on OSR a lot, like throughout my career and throughout my time as a player. But I think there's something really quite charming about saying, like, okay, you have to get through this one by the skin of your teeth, and you have to work out a trick to overcome what I've done, rather than, oh, I'm going to turn up and roll dice and do the thing. I was supposed to say Honey Heist, which is there's no working out tricks. Mm-hmm. That's not the game is not a puzzle to be solved.
No,
there's the dice. Barely show, like the dice don't really affect the story. that much. It's just high kinetic bears knocking back and forth.
And if anyone doesn't know, too, and I just think it's the funniest thing, is the two stats in Honey Heist are just bear and criminal, too. Mm. Like, it's real easy.
Early influence for lasers and feelings? Who's to say?
Actually...
Wasn't
lasers and feelings first?
I was gonna say.
yeah. It's almost like I didn't realize I was doing this. It's almost like I made lasers and feelings. It's almost like I made lasers and feelings slightly more approachable by removing the bit where you have to pick a number and then roll under or over that number, because it's really hard for players to wrap their heads around. But if it's just like, hey, you got criminal and bear. Oh, I'm in.
Yeah. Great. I've ran a lot of lasers and feelings.
Yeah, me too.
And no matter what, no matter who it is, how seasoned they are, how seasoned I am at running them, it's always, wait, which one is over again?
Mm. Yeah, it is, like, there's something about like having the core of your character be a number from 2 to 5.
It doesn't
land. But if I've got four lasers and 2 feelings. Cool, okay, I can understand that, I can see that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But no, lasers and feelings was very much, like, it pretty much uses the same system, except mine's got a bit of an arc in it, and it's not as... John, I really appreciate John Harper's way of scene setting.
Yeah.
I think that, like, and giving you little arcs in a session, like his game Lady Blackbird, does, which was, again, like, oh, that was came out 2008, I think, years and years ago. That has character arcs in a one shot supported by the XP system. Mm-hmm. And like, that blew my fucking mind when
that's
I saw
dope.
That.
Wait, hold up.
It's so clever.
I gotta find this, just
to really briefly outline it. Your character has a number of keys, and every time you tap a key, you get 1 XP. And these things might be so the captain has the key of the good captain. And this means that every time you help out your crew, or you give up something so that they can succeed, you get 1 XP, mm-hmm. and you spend XP to both level up your character and reroll dice. So it's kind of a potency thing as well. Mm-hmm. And then you can do that as long as you want. And once per game, you can break a key and get 10 XP, completely act against it, and never access it again. And for the captain, it's like, right, rat out or betray one of your crew. And it's just such a clever way of saying, right, this is normal, and then it changed. And it incentivizes it incentivizes you to do it. It pushes you into a situation where you need this XP and you need this dice to make it so clever. Yeah, John's absolutely incredible game designer. And the only reason
he did Blades in the Dark too, right?
He did Blades in the Dark. He did Ghost Lines.
Oh, I love Ghost Lines.
He did Aegon.
Oh,
the only reason why I am able to stand alongside him is because I put out 6 or 7 times as many games as he does. John Harper rolls up to the internet once every like 2 or 3 years and go, hey, I've made you a perfect gem. And just throws it. Blades! Fucking Blades came along. And it was like, oh, what if Apocalypse World was accessible and set in Dishonored? It just completely changed. And everyone was doing Blades hacks.
He's everywhere now.
He's absolutely tremendous, and I just try and rely on Way of Fire.
Have you ever run into like anyone hacking one of your systems? Because like, we talk a lot about like lasers and feelings hacks and Blades hacks, but like,
oh, there's
I'm
a
curious.
Ton of Honey Heist hacks.
Yeah.
Oh, I know Honey Heist hacks for sure. Like something doesn't get that big without
my
being,
favorite
like,
one is Be Gay Do Crimes.
Be Gay, of course.
which is a game of Honey Heist and like you can play either a bear or no, a real bear, an actual physical Ursus bear, and it's set at a pride parade, and you have to cause chaos. I think amongst the rainbow corporate floats, but I think people have done some hacks. There's been buckets of Honey Heist hacks, and I get a lot of translations of my games, like a lot of people translate the more popular ones into, or like the ones which they really like, into other languages, but no, like there's not a huge community around my one page games is the other thing. And I think like for hacks to develop, you need to have people discuss the rules.
Yeah.
And once a community arises, then people are like, oh, here's an interesting thing we can play with and do this around here. And every one-page game is like, there's nowhere to go and talk about my one-page game. I don't have a Discord or anything because there's nothing to fucking talk about. It's there. It's done. Go play it. It's not that deep.
Yeah, it's not that deep. It's literally on one page. You don't there's no other discussion that has to happen there. And like other than like flavoring it in different ways.
Yeah, but... and you can write it and you can put extra things in and you can mess around with the stuff, but really like I think for hacks to happen, you need to have people going, "Well, I reckon I can do this," as opposed to, "Well, this is finished."
And I think like, even with one page games, there is a community, but it's more the community of like, "Look how cool these games are," versus like, "I'm going to dissect the game." Yeah.
Also, you can't make money out of one page games, is the other thing. And like, I do all right. I've got a pretty robust Patreon, which is very nice. But that's not what's paying my mortgage. And because there's no way of like getting money and then supporting a community around that, I think and because the barrier to entry is so low and there's such a huge wide range of voices, that the community is very spread out and it's like, I've heard of three of these.
Yeah.
As opposed to, welcome to the One Page Games community. Here's the 10 you have to read and do the thing. which you get with role-playing games. Mm-hmm.
You made that joke and my brain is like, "Ooh, what would the 10 games you have to play be?" I'm always thinking a list. I was going to say, like, you know, the community is a big part of it, but I also think it's a testament to like how good you are at like just knocking a setting out of the park to the point where people aren't going to fuck with it.
That's very kind and a very generous way of looking at off set of rules.
I just finished reading, well, not finished reading, like not like I was by my fireplace smoking a pipe or anything, but like I was reacquainting myself with a lot of my favorite Howitt titles, and I remembered that Captain Swan Hands exists.
That's deranged. I don't know whether that works.
Captain Swan Hands has this arc. Oh, sorry, it's your game. No, how they talk about it.
It's barely my game. I wrote it with Jian Shen I did a year of collaboration with different people, and Jian's done some really fantastic games, and most of what her games are the sort of itch.io heartbreaker, go into the woods and tell a tree that you never got on with your dad sort of thing. And so I was really interested, but she does the good ones.
Yes.
And so I was like, all right, what can we do? How can we like which one of us is going to break first? And it was her, because I turned up and I was like, I've got an idea for a game where you play superheroes and your superpower is your arms are swan heads and you have to hold down an office job. And she's like, yeah, sure. I know a lot about birds.
That's so good.
And it's like systemically it's deranged. It's got it reads like a solo RPG that other people are watching you play. there's animal facts we put in there to pad out. It's a one page game, which is an 8-page booklet. sorry, 7-page, which is a challenge because paper doesn't work that way.
Don't get me started on the numerical counting thing again.
That's insane. Swan heads is arms.
Yes. Yeah, so your two hands are they're swans.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I got you. All right.
Yeah, I believe the intro line to that game is, "Fighting crime would be a lot easier if I didn't have swans for hands." which you know. It's pretty up my alley.
yeah, like fair.
It's so up my alley, it's selling drugs in my alley.
I need to play this now, holy shit.
To piggyback off of what Grant was saying, Jian Shim is legitimately a genius. He wasn't kidding when he says she writes the, like, because there's a lot of, there's like two flavors of lots of itch games, and it's like super emotional, deal with your demons, various levels of handedness, light to heavy, and then there's the shit Grant makes where it's like, here's the most insane thing I can think of. And Match Made in Heaven is that game is what I'll say. But I've been following Jian Shim for years, and she's legitimately a genius that makes beautiful fucking games.
Hell of a brain on her. Very clever. And it was really lovely talking to her. Like we immediately hit it off, but I'm like, I kind of want to do video. I kind of want to do voice calls and just sort of absorb how smart she is. the same with J Dragon. It's like, oh, no, you're what's coming next, and I'm just filling in time until you get up to speed, basically.
Actually, and I love that.
Look at J Dragon now.
I know
Wonder Home has been a smash hit.
Oh my god! And what's the bed and breakfast one?
Yazeba.
Yeah,
bed and breakfast.
That one looks so freaking good. Mm.
The indie community rocks, you know.
Yeah,
like it, you know, we partner with a lot of game creators for our show, and like nothing tickles me more than when we like tag them that we're playing their game for a podcast, and they get so geeked about it because like it doesn't happen for them too terribly often. We just ran. I don't know if you know Wendy Yu, Grant. But we played her game Apotheosis Janitors recently on the show, which is a game about a group of cultists coming together to hide the evidence that their leader was once a mortal person. So it's like the person who kept telling us was a god has recently ascended to godhood, but he had things like a mortgage and a day job and like friends in real life, and we have to figure out a way to get rid of the evidence of all that shit so no one knows he was once mortal.
It's
such a fun game to play, and like we tagged her in it, and like she was like our biggest hype man while we were putting the show out, and it's like to fucking support your local indie community. Wizards of the Coast will never retweet you, but Wendy Yu and Grant Howitt will.
Exactly, which I do want to mention very quick that you have brought up your Patreon a few times, and that's where you mainly release a lot of
a few times. You've been mentioning this a lot, bro.
It's fine.
we've had to edit out a lot of you shaking the tin can with the coins in it.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. No, but like you release a lot
singing
of one
Mary
page
Poppins
stuff there,
Tuppence
right?
Song.
Yeah. I had a break over the summer to work on Hollows. It was intended to work on Hollows, but actually what I did was I was just really depressed for 6 months, which was that's the trick.
Yeah.
So I earned less money and I was sad. I've put out one a month for fucking years. And so now, as I said, now we're up to 80. So there's a few in there.
Bananas number.
something for everyone, I hope.
And so I am curious of, like, I know that you have a ton on your itch. Is there a lot of crossover there? Or are there things in the Patreon specifically that are, like, exclusive? You can only get them there.
I kind of half-ass it, if I'm honest with you. I never really got the whole sort of like, oh, and this is Patreon. This is a special place to talk to your fans. Mm-hmm. And I think like they set up a live streaming thing very briefly called Throne. And like, I don't, that's definitely not the relationship I have with people who buy my games.
Yeah.
So like there is an exclusive thing, which is on, I think it's like for 15 quid, $15 a month. So that's $15 per sheet of paper, which is very expensive as far as paper goes. I send them a physical and it's got the back page printed on it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's generally like an extra game or some jokes, or it's often just jokes. One of them just a drawing of a witch I thought was
just
cool.
Fun stuff.
Fun extra stuff from an artist you want to support.
Yeah.
And then like maybe like a couple of years after we did that, we then released them as bundles, so you can get like all like, sorry, the first bundle has 13 games. The first year's bundle has 13 games in it, because I really liked one of the games I wrote. I think I wrote a game in the next January, and then I'm putting that in, fuck it.
And yeah, and who's in the
and so
you?
And so now every bundle has 13 games.
I'm making and my some, own rules.
And some of these one page games are A4 30 page booklets.
hell yeah.
That's so good. Oh no, man,
I never quite worked out how to engage with the community in that way, and or like just to have this is Grant's place and come and hang out with Grant. And I think like working with Chris and with Maz and with the other people at RRD, that's Rowan, Rick and Deco, Oh, I've completely forgot the end of my sentence. Oh, no. It's gone. Oh.
It happens. It's okay.
I had to remember the name of my two best friends, and that took out the end of my sentence.
And and all other words disappeared from your mind.
Yeah, yeah,
it's fun to watch yourself on camera too, as you can see the information leaving your brain as you're talking. You're like, oh my god, they're just watching me do this.
And you feel like Indiana Jones on a cliff. You're like, no. come on. And this the idea is just sashaying away through a side door.
Farewell.
See you later, handsome.
No, I'll see you at 2 a.m. when you're trying to sleep.
Good work smoking all that weed, dipshit. And she's gone.
Get ready to send an email the minute you wake up saying how sorry you are. I've been there on this show. Just mid-sentence, like, what the fuck am I talking about? I'll just keep going until I get back there.
And that's how the shit and fly analogy starts.
Yeah, you know? It's like, if you let me talk for long enough.
Yeah, you start floundering, but don't let other people realize.
This is all to say, you're good.
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah, cool. But I don't remember what we were talking about or anything, so we should move to the next question.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you because you were
a scant hour into this interview. Let's bash on to question three.
this is a usual RPG here. Goblin situation.
No, I get it. Don't worry. You're good.
What
did you want to ask,
Grant?
Sorry.
No, I was gonna say, like, because you turn out, you know, a one shot or one page game once a month, which is insane to me. Is there like an inspiration well you go down more than often?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So there's this button on the internet, right? I want to push it. I get $2,500. And all I have to do is write one page of content. And so that motivates me to do it in usually a little under 2 weeks.
Fair. Ah, yes. If I don't do this, I don't get to push the button. Motivation.
Hey, it's one of my favorite buttons on the internet.
It's a good button.
I can recommend that everyone gets one. They're great. But and I will also say, I don't keep that money. The dumb games about bears pay salaries of like our finance manager, which.
As it should.
So, it's really the pay the finance manager button.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and finance manager gets paid a lot more than me. They're much more skilled than I am, and so there's exaggeration, but I think like there's a professional obligation, there's a rhythm to it, and now that like there are a lot of people, I'm not going to say relying on me because I rely on them. And we've set up this business to hopefully mean that me and Chris can write games rather than run a business. Because we had to run a business for a while, you know, and Maz does most of the business running stuff, the three of us. But what I would like to do with... Oh, fuck, that's the end of the sentence again!
You got it. You're good.
Oh, hang on. No.
You want to focus on making games.
We're going to find this. Thank you.
You got this.
Yeah, we'll get this. There is a rhythm to it, and that means that we're relying on each other. And one of the things we do to rely on each other is like the finance manager says, okay, well, here are the reports and here are the things and here's how much tax we owe. And I have to make up a thing about bears.
Yeah.
And that's how that slots in.
Yeah.
Quite outside of the grim capitalist motivation.
The necessity of it, yeah.
I have a lot of ideas for things, and like we make our bread and butter, to use your phrase, out of writing big books, because you can sell a big book for more money, you can support it with a line, you can build a community around that, and if someone comes up to your stall and buys a single £2 one page game, like that's actually costing us more money to be there than we're making off the sale.
Right,
so a con and what have you. So I'm much these give me an opportunity to release steam. And so I'll have an idea for a game, or I'll have an idea for a mechanic, or I'll have an idea for something. And it's like, well, I need to get this out of my system now, right now. Otherwise, it's going to turn into Goats of Spire again.
Wait, hold on. Let him cook.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Now listen. I'm sorry, everyone. Just to explain, Spire is a grim espionage revolutionary game about post-colonialism, class struggle, about you play a cell of legal ministers of a forbidden religion who are trying to overthrow the government with dark magic and like hack together religious rituals. And I wrote an appendix in it called Rumored Goats of Spire because I had a really good idea for some goats.
I thought,
I could come up with some goats.
Yeah.
And so I wrote this and I was like, oh, Chris, I want to put this in the garden district, the food creation district. Chris is like, absolutely not. Like, oh, can I put it in the book? You can put it in as appendix 5.
Put it in the book, but it's not going to be where you want it to be.
Yeah. And like, can I get a drawing of a goat? Can you fuck? And we printed it and everyone fell for the goats. Everyone loved the goats.
Of course.
It was the equivalent
people
of when
you love stupid shit.
People love dumb shit.
They
but
do.
But it's like, oh, Spire, the RPG about goats. It's like, no.
No. They're just in it.
No, it's about post-colonial Haiti. It's not about goats. So I need to act as a pressure release for these dumb ideas. And so that's really cool.
Yeah.
And that means that I can find something that interests me and obsess about it and basically rotate it in my head till it catches fire for a bit. And some weeks, some months it's easy, some months it isn't. Like I just put out a game called Lexicutioners, which is a game where you have to delete the game text as you play to win.
Love it.
Like you play Rad. A word wizard.
Yeah.
And the like that was initially Space Doctors : Doctors in Space, which is Grey's Anatomy, but you're aliens.
Yes.
And I think I spent 2 weeks bouncing off that thing and turning up to meetings being like, lads, I can't get these fucking doctors to work. It's not like the dramatic arc's not right. It's just a numbers game.
Plot of Grey's Anatomy, I think.
Yeah.
And so I threw it out. I'm like, right, I'm gonna make a game where you have to murder Faye in nightclubs. Like, oh, okay, yeah, sure, yeah, yeah, that's interesting. And so I throw that around. It's like, no. And then eventually, at the last minute, stumbled out with Lexicutioners, which I started writing in November. So it's not a quick process. But it's really nice to have the opportunity to sit down and do something weird and also take the time to craft it.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that there's that button which makes $2,500 come out of the internet means that I do take it a little bit more seriously. Mm-hmm. But also I try to take everything I do with this is going to sound weird. I try to take everything I do seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I get that.
And what I'm doing is silly and what we're doing is daft. But there is a measure of like, well, it has to work as a game and it has to be explainable within a sentence and it has to resonate with people in such a way that they'll pick up on it. And so there are other considerations. And I think that it keeps my hand in, certainly. But it's, I think, pretty sure I ran out of ideas about 2 years in.
Yeah.
and so I'm just having to really open my brain to the zeitgeist and find it. But I peaked 4 months in. Useless.
And you just keep trucking regardless.
Just been dragging this bear corpse around.
You guys want to play Honey Heist?
it's me, that Grant Howard.
You don't know who I am.
It's fucking fascinating because I'll go to cons and people and it's not always because most people don't know who the fuck I am, but people come up to the con, people come up and like they'll say, oh, Spire, that sounds interesting. Like, oh, hang on, criminal Honey Heist, are you Grant Howard? And they always say the full name. Are you Grant Howard? I don't know what that accent was. Was that Australian? Sure. Strength, mate. Are you Grant Howard? Throw a D12 on the Barbie, but it's very strange to be clocked in that way because like I don't. It's the RPG industry. No one knows who the fuck anyone is.
Yeah,
it's a complete inside baseball, and no one knows what anyone looks like.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like the fact that me and you, Grant, are chatting about Gion Shim like Joe Shim is one of the greatest voices in our industry and an absolute trailblazer, really clever, doing fascinating things. No one knows who the fuck she is.
Yeah, and I think that's just like the nature of the beast of the TTRPG industry too, or like any game really, like any, you know, like movies and music, like it's all about who made it. But with like games, it's all about like, is it fun?
Yeah.
Like, and you think of like how far the creator's role is from the experience of a game. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, you've got Denis Villeneuve getting angsty about people watching Dune on their telly.
Oh, and, yeah.
Fuck off, Denis. We're in a pandemic. But I watched it on my TV. It was nice. It was fine.
Yeah.
You know what? You know what? I didn't have my shoes on. I couldn't do that at the cinema. Point being, Villeneuve gets all pissed off about the way people, unlike David Lynch, like mm-hmm. watch a film on your fucking phones.
Yeah. And I work.
I mean, I'm sure David's doing a lot of work, but part of that involves watching films on big screens. That's his job.
Yeah.
Or like when Chris Nolan is like, we're only releasing Oppenheimer in these kinds of theaters so that when the bomb goes off, your skin melts. And it's like, fuck you.
It vibrates through your entire
body.
Out
of spite, I'll watch it on my phone.
I'm gonna have someone describe this to me. And actually, that was a flippant joke, but that's how games work.
Yeah.
In that, I've come up with the idea of Spire, let's say. Mm-hmm. You know, we describe it as big, moody setting. And then we put the rules on top of that. And then the end experience, the player experience, which I think, like, there's more players than there are GMs, so let's say that's the more common experience, mm-hmm. is filtered through the rules, the GM, how the GM was feeling that day, the GM's understanding of my, of both mechanical and fiction, mm-hmm. And also everyone else at the table and what they were doing and what they put forward. And so we really have very little say in what happens and whether or not, like, it's very easy to write a bad game. Mm-hmm. But one of the things about like a good game is that you don't notice it being good. Mm-hmm. And like if it's really exciting and it's really sort of gathering you up, if it's doing what it's supposed to be doing, you shouldn't see the joins unless you're an absolute dork. And maybe like you guest on or run a RPG podcast, and so you're into this like, that's interesting. Oh, I love what they did with the D3s there. This reminds me of Vincent D. Baker's earlier work.
Hold up, D3s? I need to get me one of those.
Same. I want one.
Just a D6 in half.
I know, but it would be cool to have
a
special die.
It's a two-dimensional triangle, and you spin it like a fidget spinner.
I don't get in with this fucking dice fetishism bullshit.
No, me neither.
Back when I worked in an office, I wasn't excited about the photocopier. It's just something I had to use. And that's kind of where I'm at with dice.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I was asked in an interview recently, like, if I could be any kind of dice, what would I be?
Now that's a question.
Yeah, well, now, see, because I am who I am as a person, I didn't pick, like, one that exists. I'd be like, I want to be, like, a physical D100. And like it looks like a golf ball.
Yeah, you're just smooth.
Like each individual divot has like a number in it.
I want to be a 1-to-1 scale D100. I want to write all the numbers across the body and roll around.
No, none of this roll 2 D10s and do percentage shit. You pull out like sphere and roll it.
Yeah, that's the proper
you
way.
You throw me on the table and I'll tell you what you got.
You have to whack me with a golf club, and then wherever I land on the green is the number that comes up.
Well, what kind of dice would you be? And bonus points if you say one that exists.
Bonus points if I say one. Well, I would like to just be a D2, which most people think is just useless.
Isn't that a coin?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fucking coin.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I used to make dice, actually. I used to make dice and sell them. So I get the whole dice thing. I have plenty of dice.
I don't wish for anyone else to be like, I really don't want you to be like, oh, I shouldn't mention the fact I like dice now that Grant said I was an idiot for liking dice. No, like
you didn't say that.
I was thinking it. No, they're very pretty things, and I think that one of the few tools we have to connect with role playing games is our dice. So it's like, well, these are the most important objects in the fictional world we're building, and this is your lever for interacting with the game. So yeah, might as well have nice ones.
Yeah, but at least for me, like going from like dice to like I was only playing D&D, and then like I definitely had a dice obsession, and then getting into TTRPGs, I'm like, it doesn't matter what I have for dice, it doesn't matter. I just love the games. I read. I read the actual TTRPG books for fun.
That's Willow's fun. The reader.
Yeah, I'm Will, the one.
Willow,
who
you're over. You're our biggest and most important market.
Yeah, actually, I
big dorks.
Doesn't matter if you play them.
I have Die right here.
Very good. I see you've got the zone behind you as
I
well.
I have the zone. Zone's fantastic.
A good game.
I know. I can't wait to play it.
That's clever.
I'm so mad that I have no in person friends.
All right, Grant, we got to go to wherever Willow is and just hang out for a weekend.
Speaking from experience, you'll get used to it.
I have a whole bunch of I grew up doing all the theater stuff in my hometown. Ah. So a lot of the people that I play in person with are just actors who I've told to just come to my house. You're just going to act with me for a little bit and there's an element of chance to it and they get into it. You know, if you want someone to play with, just go to your local community theater.
I've got a little experiment coming up. We're putting together a black box. We're gonna try a few things.
Yeah.
Really avant-garde shit. You'll love it.
Have you got a director for this?
It's me. You know me.
Yeah.
Tell me how you kiss the elf.
Yeah. We did a mini series on our show, and it's the whole cat is it's me and my sister who normally handle the whole podcast stuff. And then it's literally my friend who does a lot of local theater here and my friend who's a comedian. And it was their first time playing a D&D campaign ever. And they were just fucking hilarious on it. Mm. It also helps. I have no idea how to run D&D. I just got my vibe.
No one runs it right. It's not supposed to be run right. The fun is ignoring the rules. That's the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You feel a bit cheeky.
I'm being illegal.
My main point here, though, is if you want friends to play with, just go audition or do a show with your local community theater, and then you'll just find a whole bunch of dorks.
Or apparently take improv classes. I've heard that.
Well, I did. I still have. I wake up. You know how you'll say something hideous, and you'll wake up 7-10 years afterwards. Mm-hmm. I still flash back. I'm going to say once every couple of months to the Facebook post I made inviting everyone I knew to my graduation show at first year improv.
Uh-huh.
And I would like to, I would like to really thank all my friends because not a single one of them came.
Wow.
And they were smart for not doing that because it was a shit show. It was first year graduation.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was terrible. It was unwatchable.
Improv doers out there, never invite anyone to your first time performing it live for any reason.
On your 10th time. Look, unless you're fucking Ben Schwartz, don't. Hey, it's fine.
Don't invite people to it,
honestly.
But I will say, from a player perspective, crucial.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Well, sorry, crucial. Obviously, people can do it without. But it's really useful to have the idea of there's a story here and we'll find it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and we're all going to put things in together, and we're all going to build stuff, which is kind of what I try to ski to with the one page stuff. Like everything's vague, and we trust you to fill in the details. And I learned a great deal about that from doing improv classes. Mm-hmm. And I 100%. Made again, no friends.
Who needs them?
Who needs them?
Just get in the way.
I'm gonna open my window because I'm gonna smoke a cigarette. Carry on talking.
Let's keep going.
Yeah. Improv, right?
Fill in.
Okay, I need a location. Anyone, any location.
Nashville.
Submarine!
Damn it, not that one.
That was the wrong answer.
This is off topic, but I went to a Wayne Brady show one time. And he was looking for that exact thing, wanted a setting. Mm-hmm. So from the cheap seats, I stood up. I'm 22. I stand up and I scream as loud as I can, mausoleum. And he looked into the rafters and saw me. He's no one has ever said mausoleum at this thing. I'm doing that.
Not not cool. Not funeral. Like a funeral contractor. Perfect. Yeah. Right.
So
reads
much comedy.
It's like a Harold Pinter play. But no, a place where expressly everyone is dead.
Right, yes. Nothing else to riff off of.
You create a featureless white room.
You created a core memory for him.
Yeah, it was a core memory for me, you know? That's exactly how you design and run one-shots too, by the way. You just scream something as loud as you can and see what happens. You're a fly. Anyway.
Yeah, you're a fly. You're a fly. Start being a fly. Like, just do it. Yeah, no.
Not to, like, circle back to two conversations ago, but I was, listening to Grant talk about the motivation of, like, money and deadlines mm-hmm. as a big source of creative inspiration. Holy shit, felt that in my heart, soul, and ass. Like, my God.
It's so much easier to create when you're getting paid for it.
Yeah.
And there's this real myth of like, oh, you've sold out. And you can sell out, and there's ways where you can do things, but there's a myth of the starving artist, and like, oh, well, you need to be a bit mad, and you need to be a bit starving to create absolute beauty. Mm-hmm. It's like, you need a bit of grit, you need some badness in your life to write about, but it's like, I've lived with depression for the last 27 years, mm-hmm. and it's never helped me write anything, but I've written about it a lot.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I think that's the like being able to support people and to do this as a living really gives you a firm base to operate from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and finding this is a weird way to phrase it, I'll admit, like finding the fun in the things that have historically hurt you is kind of like creatively satisfying. I'm working on something for the show. We do like two mini series a year. And I'm pulling a lot of inspiration from like my religious trauma growing up.
Mm, yeah.
Which religion?
Mormonism. Mm.
Oh, hey, fun one.
Surprise. That's a doozy.
That's a doozy.
That's one of the good ones.
What a good trauma religion.
Yeah. And I don't mean good, like morally right.
No. Yeah. Like, yeah. One of
Texturally rich.
Yeah. Like it's a bigger one, but it's still a little indie, Yeah, it's not like Catholicism. Yeah. It's everyone else can.
Like, ironically, it's the
Mormonism is the honey heist of religion, if we're being real.
I love that.
Willow, if you clip that, I swear to God.
But it's so good.
No, but I was going to say, like,
oh, God.
I as a person who likes to write from, like, places of pain, I guess. It's a real easy well to go down to when you're in desperation mode. Mm-hmm. And finding the stuff that is like relatable to you personally is really cool and a lot of fun to do. So like, a lot of people write games, Grant and myself included, about like their mental health struggles, their childhood struggles, anything. And to turn shit like that into, in my case, a game about rabbits dealing with faith, or like putting goats in spire, or
the rabbits about faith is an interesting point, because you've got to keep it at arm's length.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's like any game which is actually about depression, and any game which accurately recreates the feelings of depression is a horrible game to play. Yeah. And no one should play it. And
right,
and it always comes across as preachy isn't the right word, but it never lands. It's too on the nose. And I think that mm-hmm. if you put an elf in it, you put a rabbit in it. fundamentally, what all of my dumb games are about misbehaving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
that's
and
true.
Generally, you are agents of chaos in a structured world, mm-hmm. and you are going to misbehave for personal gain, and people don't want you to do that, and that's kind of how it feels being an artist.
I mean, yes. The more Grant talks, the more I'm like, I pulled a lot of my philosophy from reading this guy's games. You say stuff, and I'm like, oh my God, I do that. I love chaos in a structured world. We just did sock goblins, and that's exactly that. It's goblins stealing socks from people in a game, and I'm like, yeah, that's exactly right.
It's the only game that matters. I love that.
it's up there. I like that one a lot. Poor students, if you're out there, bang your game, kids. Bang your fucking game. But no, like, it's a lot of indie creators and a lot of big name creators, if we're being real, like video, everyone does this where it's like, I'm making an X, but it's really about Y. And there's a lot of ways to do that good and a lot of ways to do it like way too heavy handed. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many like free itch games I've downloaded. It was like, this game is going to be about depression or bipolar or whatever. And like, it's like a lot of like one sentence, like lines that are meant to jab at you. And it's like, I've read 50 of these for sure. You know, like there's definitely an art form to it.
Mm. Yeah. Which I mean is like that's the point of the designer, is to make it art and make it something that isn't just preachy. I mean, not preachy, but exactly.
No, preachy, heavy. Like, there's a place for it for sure. Like, it has their place. The stuff I'm drawn to is like when it's, I guess not like a subtext per se.
But it evokes, right? It resonates.
Yeah, that's a better word for it.
That's what we aim for, especially in a medium which is as hands off as game design. Mm-hmm. You have to get stuff which, like a lot of the stuff we do for research and world building, will take real world things and change the names a bit. And because it's easy and also
and
that
fun
means,
too,
and fun. And free. Wikipedia is free. And
you can just put words together, just smush them.
But if it feels real enough to hang together, or if it feels impactful enough to talk to people, then that's more powerful than it being accurate, I think.
And on the nose, too.
Yeah. It's even fun, like, when you don't intend to write something like that, and it turns into something that meant a lot to someone because they were going through it and saw that in there. And it's like, then that's in there for you.
All right. Well, I am actually really a bit to questions.
Hang on. So you're actually really a bit to questions?
Actually really a bit to questions, yeah. Sorry, my brain.
I didn't want to say anything, Willow, but I thought you were becoming actually a bit towards questions.
We cooked her.
Yeah, my brain's a little fried today, so I apologize for that. But
You're doing very well. You're rolling well with the punches that Grant and I are putting down by refusing
and we love
to talk
the
about.
Punch.
Oh yeah.
By refusing to answer the questions.
I'm just observing a wrestling match here and just.
I wouldn't say we're wrestling.
No, not wrestling. More.
We're dancing, baby.
Sport. Yeah, dancing. There you go.
I love that.
Just two idiots in a room having an excuse to share a philosophy together while Willow watches in horror as we don't
honestly
shut up.
Well, this is what I wanted. It wasn't.
It's true.
It was more space for you guys to talk more than anything.
Willow arranged a blind date for us, Grant.
Yeah. So how's it going so far? Are you liking each other?
I don't know if he likes me. I'm really nervous. He's so cute.
It wasn't not blind enough for me. I know too much about him.
He told me he has religious trauma, like, out the gate.
Yeah, like, just like...
too open.
Yeah.
Moving
too
fast.
I don't even know what he does for a living.
And that's by design.
Give us a question, Waller. Give us a question.
Yeah. Give us a question. Well, I am curious for specifically outside of, Honey Heist being played on Critical Role. That's pretty goddamn cool. What is, though, the coolest thing outside of that that has happened to you in the TTRPG space?
Easy.
Yes.
Great question. The second coolest thing that's ever happened to me is when I was too scared to talk to Greg Stoltze at the first Gen Con I went to. It was like Spire hadn't really landed yet. I hadn't made my name as a designer. Mm-hmm. Greg Stoltze has written, so he was one half of Unknown Armies. It was him and Scott Titans who wrote it. Oh. And I don't think any game's been more influential on my work and on what I think is cool. So I was too nervous to talk to him. That was the second coolest thing. But the first coolest thing is I got a message, it'll be about 3 years ago now. I got a message from 2 years ago from an old folks home in America. And they were doing like activity days and like game days for the residents who lived there, and they had run 6 tables of Honey Heist, and got hats for everyone.
Oh, what? Yes, it's so cool.
And so, and I didn't buy the hats. I don't look after the old people. I didn't wash their bottoms or any of that stuff. But I had some small part in these people who'd never roleplayed before in their lives put on a hat and be like, "Whoa, I'm a criminal bear!" And that's delightful.
That rocks. Amazing.
That's what I want. That's what I want to do.
That's it, man.
That's why I get up in the morning. So yeah, that was pretty swish, I gotta say.
Nothing feels like better than someone telling you how much they appreciated what you did making someone's day.
I know.
Absolutely. And using it in a way I hadn't thought of, or like using it to bring people together. And especially like you hear about like, because my games are quite short, you hear like a lot of, they get run at schools, or like a lot of like kid groups play them. I know that like there was a class in an American school ran Everyone is Seagulls, which is
Everyone is Seagulls is great.
It's a deranged game where the main mechanic is yelling as loud as you can.
I love it.
And making a noise like a seagull. And apparently, yeah, 16 kids all playing Everyone is Seagulls.
If you're gonna play it with a group of people, that is the market for sure.
It needs to be like out in the playground or something, like where everyone can go.
No, big amphitheater, like one of those medical theaters where everything echoes.
You will not come out of that with your hearing intact.
I've met some people whose games I really like, and you know, like again at that first Gen Con, we got invited to the fancy party. We got invited to the secret party, which I didn't know about. But the organizer of Gen Con runs a room party on the Saturday night. And we went along, and I didn't know anyone in the room because they were all high-tier American game designers. Wow. And so I'm standing there next to the boxed wine, which I insisted they opened. I'm standing there next to the boxed wine, necking room temperature white. And I'm talking to this guy in a fucking cape. Dude's turned up in like a red velvet cape with an ermine lining. And like I was making a joke about how like, oh, no one here has ever heard of my games, you know. Oh, like, oh, you don't know about Spy, you don't know about, do you know about Honey Heist? No, that's quite popular. No, I never heard that one. Oh, what have you written, mate? Dungeons and Dragons or something? He said, no, I write Pathfinder.
Oh, shit.
And,
yeah.
And I was like, oh, cool. Well, I've ruined this.
Yeah.
Goodbye. And I chain smoked outside until it was time to leave.
I've got to go now.
Yeah, so no, I don't like.
So that's top three experience then. Yeah, like,
I will also say. So last year at Gen Con, we went all out. We got everyone from the company. We all flew out and we shared a house in not a great neighborhood in Indianapolis. This like
there's so few great ones.
Yeah, and this one was proper fucking sketchy. But we shared a house, and on the Saturday night, I didn't get to go. I wasn't invited to the secret room party, but we took over this place called West Fork Whiskey Bar. And the great thing about West Fork Whiskey Bar is it's a 20-minute drive from the convention center, so no motherfucker would ever go there. And so we took it over, and we had all of the GMs who were running games for us, and all of the people who were working on our stall, and all the members of the team, and like and people who we liked from the industry. We brought everyone along, and we had pizza and drank whiskey, and it was really like, oh, we put this together.
Yeah,
I'm here with my friends, and I'm the other side of the world, and that was really exciting. And we can't afford to do it ever again.
But you got the one in. That's the important part.
It at least happened once. One thing that I actually really, really wanted to ask with having you on is I want to know some of your favorite TTRPGs personally, ones that you love to run, love to play, all of that. I want to hear them all, please.
I don't get to run and play as much as I used to because it's what I do all day, every day.
Yeah.
And so, like, in the evening, I want to build toy soldiers.
Yeah.
And smoke marijuana, and during the day, I have to like have proper grown up thoughts about role playing games. So like the prospect of being, yeah, you know, like a real job. The prospect of being in character for 4 hours is often quite exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, I've played a lot of games and I've got a broad history. So the games which are really important to me are, see if I can remember, Dogs in the Vineyard. Which was D. Vincent Baker's kind of the first thing which he put out properly. It's off sale now, and the reason why it's off sale is its problematic religious beliefs. Because it's a brilliant pitch for a game. You play teenage, virgin, Mormon missionaries, who are also war keepers.
Sorry, I Vietnam mode there for a second. Yeah,
it's like it's set in the Old West, and broadly you ride on your horse between these communities, and each community is riven with sin in some way. And it's up to you to how you excise the sin from the town. And like, are you kind? Are you punishing? Do you try and reincorporate lost sheep, or do you execute them in the street?
Oh my.
And so it's hugely intense to play. It's exhausting. Mm-hmm. And the mechanics mechanics are absolutely inspiring in that it's basically poker played with dice, and you're making Ooh. Pairs and triples and matching them. But you can always add more dice by getting more violent. So you start talking, and you're like, oh, I want to persuade this guy to tell me where his son is, because his son's been mutilating sheep mm-hmm. or something. And I roll and I fail. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm gonna get my fist dice into this and beat it out of him. And you get to grab that. And so the fallout of that is like, the more violence you bring in, the more violence you will be susceptible to.
Yeah.
And like, then the absolute technique is pulling your revolver, and everyone gets to describe their revolver and do the thing. And you have these really tense shootouts. There's a lot of PvP. There's a lot of like theological disagreements. It's absolutely exhausting, but it's a fascinating game. And yeah, it doesn't exist anymore. Vincent pulled it because of the Mormon stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't blame him, but
yeah,
it's a powerful thing.
Good call.
That's intense.
It's not cool, but I'm quite fond of 5th Ed. I quite like Dungeons and Dragons. Mm-hmm. I think that it's the McDonald's of food. But sometimes McDonald's of food, and McDonald's the McDonald's of food.
Yeah, well, I mean... You could eat
truly the champagne of wines.
Yeah,
I really enjoy how you say, "Oh, do you want to play Dungeons and Dragons?" Yeah, I know what that is. Cool, mm-hmm. and I come along, yeah. and you ignore the rules, and you use the systems to tell a story. You use the setting to tell a story,
yeah.
and I've had tremendous fun with people who haven't done a lot of role playing before.
Mm-hmm.
But like generally, like what I'd do is we'd set them up, and they'd be like, "We'd set it in school." So like it would be like you go to the school for adventurers, and it's your final year project. Yeah, yeah. You have to go on an adventure.
I love it.
And so everyone's like, and there's also a genre of British fiction, which I don't know how big it is in the US, but called like the Fantastic Five. Is a writer called Enid Blyton, and Enid Blyton did all these stories almost 100 years ago now, where there are various posh boys and girls, and it's girls, not girls, and they go and solve a mystery of some kind.
Okay.
And there's generally a dog called Smudger or something along those lines. And they have iced buns and lashings of ginger beer. And so like, we just take that and run D&D in it. And that was tremendously fun.
Yeah. That's why everyone loves 5th edition. It's infinitely flexible, and it can be whatever you want, and all the rules are take what you want and run with it, you know?
I'm also going to say, I really like 4th ed. And yeah. I think that like it's a beautiful game system. It's far better at doing fights than any other edition of D&D.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's tremendous, but unfortunately, they didn't put any role-playing in it.
Yeah.
They skipped out on the role-playing in their role-playing
The evolution of D&D is going from like, doing combat and then going to role playing because of the shifting tides.
I really like the Mecha Hack, which is itself a hack of the Black Hack. I think the Black Hack's a really clever system. It's a D20 roll under system.
Mm-hmm. I love roll
which unders. And it was the first one I ever saw.
Yeah.
And I thought I was really impressed with that. So I've run a bit of Black Hack and Mutant Hack, and I ran a wee campaign of Mecha Hack for a while. And I think that system is my... I really enjoy it for... Let's have a quick game.
Yeah.
It's like everything's there and it's ready, and there's few choices for players to make aside from in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really cool. Also, honorable mentions, anything Chris McDowell writes.
Yeah.
So it's the guy who did Into the Odd. He did Electric Bastion Land. Yeah. And he'd done Mythic Bastion Land. And Mythic Bastion Land is so good as to be insulting to every other designer on the market. It's so fucking clever. He's put feelings in OSR and it works. It's amazing.
So yeah, Into the Odd is so fucking good. I love Into the Odd.
It is an Electric Bastion
Dumb good.
Oh my god.
100 classes.
Yeah. 100 classes, and that's what most of the book even is.
Yeah, I mean, like if you get your rocks off to creating characters, Into the Odd, like, wow.
Oh yeah.
If you thought Baldur's Gate 3 was hard to make a character in.
Oh my god.
I struck a chord.
I also want to chip in on Sleepaway.
From Drake Dragon. I heard of Sleepaway, yeah.
Which is like, so like Wonder Home and Yazeba are obviously incredibly clever. Mm-hmm. And I think that like Wonder Home was the bit where Belonging Outside Belonging as a dice format really found its feet. Because Avery McDowell, no, I think it's McDowell, no, shit. Avery Alder invented it, and there was this sort of brisk zine which she put out, and then Jay was like, well, what if we made it into an actual big game? And so Wonder Home's really good for that, but I find that Wonder Home and Yazeba, I don't have the conflict I'm after, and Sleepaway is really, really cool, because you play a bunch of queer teens at summer camp, and all the adults die, and something's trying to kill you.
Naturally,
it's a fascinating way of doing horror, but also like showing how characters grow up and showing how people interact with each other in a separate situation. I think that's really cool. I like Bite Marks by Becky Anderson. So Black Armada Games is the company. So it's Becky and her husband Josh write games. They did Lovecraft-esque, which you might have heard of. A few other things, but Bite Marks it's an apocalypse world game. I don't normally go in for those, but Becky came up with this absolutely genius way of getting around the fact that combat's kind of boring in apocalypse world, which is you have a werewolf pack, and you pick up like stress points on the pack, and your pack gets stressed the more, like if you have arguments, if you make out with each other, if you like basically when you have strong feelings at one another, and there's some quite nice moves for it, you charge up this pack score, and then once you have 15 of it, you can spend it to defeat any obstacle you like.
That's cool. Bite Marks.
It's a game about werewolves as well, is the other thing.
I knew about Black Armada because of Flotsam is the game that they made that I have of theirs.
But that's a brief sort of sojourn around what I find interesting. But I always think it's really interesting to see when a creator has a voice and when they put that voice into their games, and when you can see like this is what they care about, and this is what's interesting to them. And like, much like you, Willow, I don't play a lot of games. I buy games and I read them and I consume them. And generally, like Chris, my business partner Chris, he really likes buying games. He really likes owning games, and he has like a company. There is a budget set aside for Chris, and so I just sort of, a lot of it just filters down to me eventually. So it was Chris who picked up The Zone. And just like in terms of like game design, it's very nice. It's basically for the Queen, but with some more rules in. But like as far as the experience of opening the box goes, and all the art, and how rich it is, and how spooky and immediately interesting it is, very impressed.
Just picks you up, like it just stands out immediately. And I actually I got it, so I backed like the backer kit, whatever, which one it was, Kickstarter backer kit.
You supported it.
I supported it, exactly.
Crowdfunded.
Yeah, I supported it, and then we're like in the process of like moving and trying to sell our house, and so I had everything get sent up to my brother, and he got it like a few months ago, and I'm like, okay, you are coming down for Christmas, and I need you to bring The Zone down for me. I don't think you understand. I've waited a year to open this game. I require it, and luckily he did. But no, it's beautiful, and I love the fact that they went with the holographic cards too, because I think it just ups the
Really classy.
Yeah, and then like it's a beautiful experience opening, and the fact that like you're supposed to play it in a dark room with like glow sticks.
Yeah,
it's so cool.
A bit of theater, right?
Yeah.
That's why. But the old razzle dazzle.
That's why, I like 10 candles too. Even like just that physical element of having all the candles lit. Yeah. Like that's what pains me that I don't have people in person, because I love those games. I love those physical elements to games. And it's so emulate online.
Back in uni, which is what we call college. Back in uni,
I've watched Doctor Who. I was. I know where
it's cycle.
I've watched my fair share.
a guy in our game society. He ran a Silent Hill game using World of Darkness.
Smart.
which so it was WoD Mortals back in the day, and the rules were that when you came into the room, all the lights were off, and you used a torch. And he deliberately bought the worst torches that he could find, and then left them on so the batteries ran out.
Oh my god! That's like Silent Hill.
So we're sitting there trying to read our fucking World of Darkness character sheets by flickering torchlight. Mm-hmm. And then he gave us in the second session an AM radio. And he illegally purchased an AM radio broadcaster in his laptop, which meant that whenever we got near to monsters, he'd just turn up the volume. And it has a thing. And eventually, session five, we just turned the radio off.
Yeah.
Because it was really scary.
That is the best.
The commitment to a concept.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
That's incredible.
And I don't have that. I don't have that level of commitment. Yeah. To my hobby time, I don't think, or like to my social time in that way. I'll certainly spend a lot of time making a toy soldier or something. But one thing which we're trying to do in our convention games is we realize that one of our rules is we pay every GM because a lot of places don't, or they'll give them free books or whatever, and they are doing the job for you. It's tacky. And then we realized that if we want to run enough games to make an impact, we couldn't afford to pay all of our GMs. And then we'll run fewer games. We'll make the games we're running bigger. Mm-hmm. And so at Gen Con, we've got six multi-table simultaneous games happening where we want, like, so I'm planning on doing like a time traveling honey heist game where there's six tables running all at the same time. We've got like a game of Ork Borg, which is a Mork Borg hack I wrote, but you play Space Orcs from Warhammer.
Love it.
And but we're crossing it with Crash Pandas. So you're all steering the same spaceship.
Of course.
We want to try and do like with the candles, like with the glow sticks. We want to try and get a bit of the atmosphere, a bit of the showmanship back into it. And I think if we're at Gen Con and people are paying $10 a ticket or $5 a ticket or however much, that means that we can afford to we'll make sure that we'll spend the time and the effort briefing our GMs and writing a good scenario and hiring the best people to do this, and we'll get the props and we'll do the thing and we'll make sure and we'll build the environment. And I think I grew up doing before I was a games designer, before I was a games journalist, I used to do immersive games. I used to do like live games quite often. We used to do a game called Zombie LARP, which was in an abandoned shopping mall in Reading.
That's so cool. Holy shit.
Yeah, we had 120 players.
Huh?
And four rounds, and for one round you were a person. And every other round you were a zombie. And you had to try and get out. And it was all Nerf. It was all, I've still got the fire axe, but there you can see.
Oh, hell yeah.
That's so cool.
It was all Nerf, no calls.
Yeah.
Like no like, oh, I've been hit twice in the arm. Let me note this down. Everything did one damage. Shut up. Play the game.
We're streamlining. I had a nickel.
and we used to do me and Maz ran a game over a decade ago now in Melbourne in the city center back when we lived in Australia, and it was called Spirits Walk. And so people went around the city center down alleyways and found masked weirdos dressed up as spirits of the city, and we got them to commit social transgressions. So like they found the stepping girl, and the stepping girl had like a disco ball mask and a disco ball dress, and she gave you an MP3 player with two headphones. Uh-huh. And so like the deal is, you had to put you had to find a partner, useful if they were playing the game but not required, put one earbud in each, and then dance according to the instructions you were given. And we gave people different instructions, which made it seem like one of them was falling for the other. and the other one wasn't into it. And fuckery, I wouldn't pull now. But there's something about right, this is happening right now. Yeah. And every game we play is, right, this is something happening right now. Mm-hmm. And how high can we push that? It's kind of an exciting thing to think about.
I adore that.
That's so good.
So cool.
Man, my brain is cooking right now.
I know.
That's so good.
It's like
that was the most involved one. That was like,
yeah, like, but like
there was a lot of goofy shit which I haven't mentioned.
I love the theater of it. I love I think if you're gonna do live games like that, like, even if, like, you do a podcast and you host a live version of your show, like, in a theater or something, like do something goofy to bring the audience and have them be part of it, you know?
It's the idea of, I mean, and this is strictly for immersive theater, but I suppose it's part of live streaming as well, if you've got that audience. But being able to set it in Melbourne and have people go, like, well, they've walked past the street to work every single day.
Yeah.
And tonight, there are 12 couples dancing in the street while a disco ball lunatic spins and yells.
Yeah.
And all of them are going to have an awkward social situation while this is happening.
Gonna get to where they, did you see that out there? What the fuck was
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I will say, like first night we ran it, we got a lot of people like fucking with us.
Yeah,
because of course, because it was open. Yeah. You know, it was and because the people who were running it weren't quite sure of the level of how much they could just be like, oh, fuck off.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
And so there was a measure of like engaging with the crowd rather than like, no, we're doing something weird and you can watch.
Yeah,
as opposed to this is a game for you to play, and that's kind of a.
Was this like just a thing that? Like they just decided to do? Was this part of like an event club type thing?
Oh yeah, it was an organization in Australia called Pop Up Playground.
Okay,
it was Sarah Lothian and Rob. Oh, I forget his name. Bugger. But they ran live games, and they happened to be at a game which we ran in Bristol. And then they really liked it. They interviewed us briefly for a documentary they were making, and then we moved to Australia. and it just so turned out the day we were landing, they were in Sydney, despite living in Melbourne, and they were doing like a presentation at a local university.
Yeah.
So I think I'd been awake for like 2 weeks at this point, and I stagger in and like, hello there, I'm really interested in playing and learning about live games now.
And somehow, man,
yeah. Could you pat me gently until I stop kicking?
And, I need a pillow and a warm milk, please.
We're getting off topic. You know, the topic is games, but I think I'm really excited to see how we can, like with 12 Candles, like with Dread, like with these games which have a centerpiece and which have artifice to them. And how rite and ritual. You referenced Die earlier. Like Die has an awful lot of the ritual around it, and like we keep saying, this is important. Do it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do those things and go through those steps, then the game resonates better.
Yeah.
And like we had to get in special. Like we had to come up with new special safety tools for Die because it's such a bleedy game. Like it's a dangerous game to run.
Mm-hmm.
For the listener, in Die you play an ordinary person who makes a role-playing game character and then gets sucked into the world of the role-playing game.
So cool.
And the role-playing game is made out of all their traumas and fears. And so...
As all great ones are.
Yeah.
And it's this absolutely like cathartic, heartbreaking experience to take part in. So we had to be super fucking careful about like giving that to people to make sure they could do it safely.
Yeah.
But we tried to put in safety tools. We tried to be... Like we want people to be able to play as hard as they can and then pull back, rather than get upset. I ran a game at a funny heist at university. At a university.
Yeah, Honey Heist University.
I thought there was like a spin-off game. I didn't know about
Honey Heist U.
That'd be so good.
I ran a game of Honey Heist, and I asked people for their lines and veils beforehand, which is a tool like where and again this, I know you're both nodding, but for your audience,
yes.
It's a tool where you say I'm okay with this being alluded to in the game, but I don't want to see it. Mm-hmm. And I don't want any of this in the game at all.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so this is Honey Heist, bear in mind. And so one of the players said, oh, I really don't like bees.
Oh,
okay. I was like, okay, what's the problem with bees? Oh, it's if they're swarming, if there's more than one bee. Okay, well, there's only ever going to be one bee in this game. is there anything else you want me to take out of the game? And they were like, well, yeah, I don't like it when cars aren't where cars should be. It's like, oh, okay, I'm going to make you the driver. And that's up to you.
Okay. You can control the car.
Yeah.
I think eventually like they ended up getting, I think they got a Zamboni because it didn't count as a car and that was okay.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, like, we were laughing and it's a funny solution, but it's like, kudos on you for like instead of this removing cars from the fucking game or something, yeah, or like
it's one
like,
okay, it's they're one all sixth parked the character properly. Classes.
Yeah,
as you said, Willow, the fun part is where a bear drive car.
Yeah, when yeah. bear drive car and
bear drive car. Bear don't drive car.
That's not where a car should be.
That's not where car shouldn't be around bear.
I'm glad that they didn't count Zamboni as a car because there's only one place a Zamboni should be.
Yeah, this is true.
Oh, I think they use a lot of rickshaws. And it's car adjacent trains, car adjacent transports, which they drove. But like, I think there's a school of thought, especially around the old guard, that you shouldn't take care of people at your table, and they'll work it out. And if you've been playing with the same people for 20 years, sure, you're doing it, you're doing it already, and you're not aware that that's what you're doing.
You already have those systems in place and conversations already had. Yeah,
don't mention that, he gets upset. That's as opposed to, hey there, what don't you want in this? Because this is experience, and that's like, and it can be quite confronting to some people, especially things like, hey, I'm a stranger, tell me all of your fears.
Yeah, tell.
we do that on the show, especially because we're all I run the show exclusively with basically strangers, so I'm always like, if there's anything that I'll describe the game we're gonna play to them. And I go, if there's anything here that you want me to only allude to or just cut out entirely, let me know. And it's great. And I always love the counter argument these the older generations like to do, where it's like, oh, I don't do any of that baby stuff. I just tell them that my game's gonna be hard as shit, and if they don't like it, they can leave. And it's like, my guy, that's a safety tool. Yeah.
You're setting up the expectations right there.
Just because you said snowflake and cuck.
I don't use pronouns. I'm a he.
My guy.
I'm afraid to tell you this. Obviously, there's more questions that we can ask, but no, this has just been great.
It's nice.
I really enjoyed all the laughs, of course, but getting to connect philosophically and talk about the funds and the necessities of the genres and stuff.
I think we've all sounded very clever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Positively.
I'm glad that we're smart.
Sound like professionals.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
We know we're fucking doing and have our shit together. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I know we're towards the end here. I just, just to reemphasize it, I mean it. Like Grant Howitt opened the door, whether he realizes it or not, for me and to really nail down the style of my voice and genre and show. Mm. So getting to just talk with you about RPGs is I can't believe I'm at a point in my life where that can happen and I can talk to somebody like that.
Firstly, you shot your shot, which is important. You got to shoot your shot, and I will say I turned down a few shots. Mm-hmm. Oh, hello. So there's a cat in my room.
Surprise!
You shot your shot, which is important. But secondly, we have the same first name.
Yeah.
And no one with the same first name has asked me to be on a podcast of three people before. Which I've got to say, Willow, I think you've done very well not referring to one of us throughout this episode.
Yeah, I didn't get confused once.
Yeah, try and avoid it at all costs.
Just don't mention any of us by name.
Yeah, I know.
Could the esteemed gentleman in the baseball cap.
This is my question for you. Yeah, no.
I've never esteemed anything.
No, and I'm just so thankful that you were even willing to do this too, because
it's been fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Right. And it's
I listened to your show, and you seemed like you got your head screwed on, and you had that excellent flying shit metaphor. And firstly, you had that excellent flying shit metaphor, and then Willow, you wouldn't stop barracking him and really like riding him around and being rude. I really like that in a host. So I thought, well, yeah, I'd go for a bit of that. You've been quite deferent, unfortunately, but that's okay.
You're really polite, actually. Yeah. What the fuck?
It's only for Grant. I'll only harass Grant.
Right. One day I'll make my honey heist and she'll treat me with the respect I deserve.
Even then, I don't think so.
No.
No, after Anthony and after Anthony March in the paranormal episode, no, never.
That's fair. That is fair. We had Willow on our show, and our characters butted heads a lot. So now Willow and I have a dynamic locked in.
It's wonderful playing a game with someone who you like and is also willing to just tear the shit out of you.
Don't be too precious about it.
Every time I play a game with Chris, my co-author, he kind of ends up becoming a secondary adversarial GM.
I know a few people like
not adversarial to the players, adversarial to me directly.
You personally, yes,
and he will with not a straight face, with a grin, turn to me and no but an idea and tell me to fuck off.
I have a player who I work with a lot, who played a game with me recently, and like I was like telling like one of the other players like the scene, what they can do, we were just riffing back and forth, and he turns to her and goes, "You're not supposed to help him. You're not supposed to make him feel like he's succeeding. Like, you got to be meaner to Grant." I'm like, "Shut the fuck up."
Not in front of the new players. Stop it. I'll kill you.
I'll kill you again. In game.
In Minecraft.
Yeah, we'll hop on Minecraft after this and you're dead. Oh my god. No, but I...
Willow, thank you a ton for organizing this. This has been a blast.
Thank you guys. No, this was awesome. And I guess, like, final thing, you know, Grant, people know where to find you. I'll put all the links there.
Which one?
Grant Nordine. Grant Nordine.
Got her. Finally.
How dare you? But Grant Howitt, because I didn't actually have you do it properly at the beginning, before we finally end off here, can you tell everyone where they can find you and where they can get your awesome games and be able to play Honey Heist for themselves and also commit vehicular manslaughter?
Absolutely. Yeah. For Honey Heist, simply type the words Honey Heist into Google and you'll find that a lot of other layouts that are better than mine. So take those and play it. If you want to commit vehicular bear manslaughter. I am G.S. Howitt. That's G.S.H.O.W.I.T.T. on most things. Not G. Showit, which is, it's fun to pronounce it that way. But G. Showit. I get that a little bit. But G.S. Howitt anywhere. And if you want to see like our big sort of grown-up games, if hearing me chat with Grant here made you think like, oh, what a clever and erudite fellow. I'd love to pay over £40 for something he made. You can go to rrdgames.com, which is our big fancy new website. And I want you to know, on all the product photography that we have on that website, if you see a cool, moody-looking picture of a book with fog behind it, that's not fog, that's vape. And I was crouched by the side of the table, huffing an overclocked vape room.
Perfect.
Because the smoke machine broke.
Yeah, absolutely. Gotta make it yourself. Hey, it's being resourceful.
Oh, we hired a photographer. He had lights. We had a set. He was just like, can you vape over this? Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Running over there right now.
Yes. RIDgames.com. You can get all of my free games are on there. All of our expensive games are on there. We have, especially for the American audience, unlike a lot of Brits, we have a fulfillment center in America as well. So you can get things with reasonable postage, although still crazy postage because 2024.
Yeah.
But you know, you can have the games. That's nice. And if you are interested in the only one other thing I will say is please search for Eat the Reich.
Mm-hmm.
And throw a pre-order at it because I don't sell it through the website and it's big dumb fun.
Hell yeah. And all of those links, of course, will be in the description just to actually be able to find them easier.
I always used to say that when I did podcasts. Yeah. I never put a link in anywhere.
Well, I follow
through. Willow does. I'll vouch for her. She does.
Oh, hats off to you. What a professional.
Yeah, I put my links there. I want people to find the games. Like, mostly it's because I want people to find the games because sometimes it can be hard to know where to look.
And that is the point of your show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It helps.
Come to think of it, yeah, it might be.
Willow and I got that sister show thing going on. It's like a whole bunch of games hyping up creators. So when we say link in the description, we kind of have to mean it.
Yeah.
But oh my goodness, yeah. No, this was absolutely great. Absolutely chaotic and tons of fun. Thank you so much, Grant, for coming on to do this with me. I hope everyone had a great time listening. Maybe we'll figure out how to do something like this again. I don't know. We'll see.
We'll figure it out.
But yeah, thank you so much. Grants for coming on. Thank you everyone for listening. And yeah, end of the episode because someone has to go eat.
Bye.
People have to
Bye, Willow.
Eat.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Love you.
Everyone just starts screaming.
Huge thank you to all of the Patreon supporters and Kyle Addison for being our $20 patron who gets their name shouted out at the end. Thank you.